This is PCJ Radio International.
Radio Berlin International.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
This is Radio Nederland, the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland.
You're tuned to Swiss Radio International in Bern.
This is Free China as a presentation of the Voice of Free China, the international service of the Broadcasting Corporation of China.
This is Radio Havana, Cuba.
Broadcasting from Cuba, free territory in the Americas.
This is Radio South Africa.
This is Yugoslavia Radio Belgrade calling.
This is Israel broadcasting from Jerusalem.
This is Radio Kenyan of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
This is the General Overseas Service of the BBC.
Hello, I'm Keith Parent, and welcome to another edition of the program. Coming up today, cuts to the BBC World Service. The Greek public broadcaster was taken off the air this week by the Greek government. Jeff White's going to be joining us for a report looking at the changes to the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters. And then Pauline McQuarrie will be with us to talk about competition within the mobile sector in Canada. We have this and much more. This is Media Network Plus, riding the waves. What kind of waves? Radio waves, of course. Well, it seems over the last 2 years, every time we turn on a television, radio, or pick up a newspaper, in the business section, that is, or the economic section, we always hear something about the Greek economy. Greece has been going through a major recession, and the government has introduced a series of austerity measures to improve the economy. But it's really not having that much effect. There's still millions upon millions of euros from other EU nations flooding into the country. This week, the government announced that it was shutting down the public broadcaster. That's right, Greece now no longer has a public broadcaster. It was shut down. Screens went black and radio dials went silent. To find out more, here's Sarah Wilkinson.
The revolution is being televised everywhere but Greece. A general strike called to protest the death of public TV station ERT has brought the country to a standstill. Off air since Thursday, many Greeks gathered outside the ERT building to let their anger be known. Many trade unions fear the precedent that the rapid shutdown could set. This is a very important struggle that impacts everybody, because the draft bill is not only about ERT, it's about thousands of other workers too, because it's a green light for thousands of layoffs in public organizations. The snap decision to make almost 2,700 ERT jobless overnight has shocked the nation. However, Prime Minister Antonio Samaras insists the channel was a symbol of waste and lack of transparency, and its closure helped to meet bailout requirements. I agree with the strike, but regarding ERT, both sides have good points. On the one hand, people are getting fired, but on the other, there are way too many of them, and we have to foot the bill. Trains, buses, and the underground were halted for the third time this year, and riot police brought in to keep the peace. As the strike continues, broadcasters across Europe have stood by their side. Franco-German channel Arte recorded a news bulletin in Greek on Wednesday for internet users.
Another big story this week in international communications, the BBC World Service is to have a funding cut of £2.22 million this fiscal year. Doesn't seem like a lot, but actually, apparently it is. The BBC Trust Chairman Lord Paton called the news disappointing, though the head of the World Service said there would be no cuts to its output. Funding for the BBC World Service will be transferred from the Foreign Office to the BBC license fee from next April. In response to the announcement, Lord Paton said the BBC would increase the service's funding to £245 million in 2014. The figure is a 6.5 million more than the 238 million pounds the BBC is currently getting from the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. This is the fourth one-off funding cut in 4 years, says Peter Horrocks, the director of the BBC World Service. He said there would be no cuts to the output nor reductions in staff or headcount as a result of the cut, though he did not mean the service would not be able to invest into new programs and platforms as they planned. Mr. Horrocks welcomed the Truss's confirmation of his 2014 budget, which he said would protect the service. Well, I'm sure this is one story that we're going to be paying a closer eye to this year. You are listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. If you want to contact us, of course, there's email. But if you call our answer line, we can use your message on the show. Here's Bob Zanotti to tell us more.
Call the PCJ answer line at country code 44-20-3286-1399. That's country code 44-20-3286-1399 and leave your comments and questions. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
In many countries around the world, the mobile sector is highly competitive. Well, this is not the case with all countries. If we take Canada, for example, there are three major mobile phone providers. They are Bell Canada, TELUS, and Rogers. Canada, however, is planning to introduce more competition. Canada does have the highest mobile phone rates, or rather almost the highest mobile phone rates in the world. But the government is finding this a challenge. They want to introduce competition. They say there's competition now, but is there really? To find out more, we're now joined by our own Pauline McQuarrie.
Well, yeah, you really hit the nail on the head, if there is any. It's tricky. We don't have a large population relative to the geography that that we live on. So competition is a problem. We've got some incumbents. You mentioned big three, TELUS, Bell, and Rogers. They have a hard enough time duking it out, but there's a bit of collusion going on, too, because we have some of the highest telecom rates in the world. We've got just ridiculous roaming charges, but it is hard for little guys to come in.
So let me ask you, you talked about, say, high charges and high roaming charges, but there are these big three. But is it just the thing that these are three big, well-established companies and they don't want to step on each other's toes and they just kind of want to keep the status quo?
Well, it seems to be a lot of that, Keith, quite frankly. And they, you know, like to lobby government and they like to protect their turf. And you've got upstarts that have been coming in. And the government, the current government, since they've been a majority, have tried to support smaller upstarts. For example, Wind. We spoke about Wind on a program about a year or so ago, maybe two now. And it was owned by an Egyptian media mogul. And he came in with great plans, great hopes for providing some really good service and some stiff competition. Unfortunately, it just didn't work out that way. And I think one of the big problems is that there were rules and regulations put in place, but they really weren't enforced. So you things like tower sharing, things about like roaming rates, they just kind of went by the wayside. The incumbents were allowed to come in and actually, ironically, undercut the little guys. So they've been doing things that really weren't intended to support them, but to support the newcomers. So I think that there is, like you said, it's when you started out, Keith, is a competition is for some a dirty word, and the government has to really play politics a lot. They've got to balance, the pro and the anti-competition types, because really they can't do anything unless they're elected, and to get elected they have to please everybody, you know. So it is hard to do business in Canada, I think, largely because of politics, but also just simply, the question is, do we have the population base to support a competitive market and a lot of competitors in this field? Because it is an expensive industry to to start up and to maintain, much like airlines, for example.
Well, let me tell you something interesting. You know, we've seen a lot of news lately about Burma finally opening up to the world. Now, the communications sector in Burma, which is years behind even underdeveloped nations, has just started allowing foreign competition to come into Burma to increase competition from the local provider. Now, in Burma, Paulette, right now, if you want a SIM card for your mobile phone, the cost is $800. That's just for the SIM card.
Wow.
And it's not like you can apply it and get it. You have to go through a lottery. Now, they've just let in two foreign communication companies, one from Norway and another one from Australia, that have come in and have offered SIM cards for less than $15, which has shaken up the main government-run communications provider. So what I'm sort of seeing is that countries, let's say, that are developing their communication system want foreign owners to come in to make more competition for the domestic market. But it seems that in Canada, it's the other way around.
Well, in Canada, the public opinion appears to be split, from what I can tell from some of the comments to articles on this issue. There is a certain element that is completely opposed to foreign ownership, and this is kind of like a protectionist mentality where, we have to have our own, and we can't have people from outside the country coming in and buying up our industries, and we lose our identity and our culture and that kind of stuff. And then there is the other side of people who do understand that, that's a little bit of an extremist fear, and it's just pragmatic and practical to have people come in from outside the company who, A, probably have more experience because they've been operating on a global in a global marketplace, and are just better heeled than Canadians, and can actually give provide some competition and maybe shake things up. But you get the impression sometimes here in Canada that nobody wants to be shaken up. We're very comfortable, thank you very much. But we don't realize that we're on a downhill slide. We are not competitive with the world.
Let me ask you a question on this then, because running a communications network, mobile or whatever, actually it's not a cheap thing to do. It costs a lot of money. The question is, does anybody in Canada have the money to come along and to create a new network when you have, let's say, networks from overseas that are willing to come in, willing to invest in infrastructure, more modern infrastructure that is currently being invested in? Is this not a concern? We have to bring the foreign money in because Canadians are not willing to put money into it.
Well, that is a consideration, absolutely. And as we saw with wind, that was, the government did go there. They did open that up, and they were able to because they were finally a majority government for many years. Prior to that, when the Harper government was in a minority position, it would have been completely a death knell. They would have, just sealed their own coffin by attempting to open things up to foreign ownership. I mean, the opposition would have just pounced on them. They would have been kicked out of office, and they would not have had a chance to be elected. So they had to go slow, and they did go slow. They eventually they did become a majority government. Then they did allow wind to come in with foreign ownership, and they were in a majority position, so they could do that. And as I mentioned earlier, what they did not do was really see that the rules, the new rules and regulations allowing competition for the benefit of the Canadian consumer, I might add, that those rules and regulations were actually enforced, and they weren't. As I said before, that the incumbents then could come in and undercut those upstarts, cut them off the knees before they got established and were able to really provide any serious competition. So that's the situation in Canada right now. I think that the government wants to address that. They want to level the playing field, but they have to play politics because a lot of these big companies support them. to get elected. So they do have to, you know, try to keep a balance, keep everybody happy. That being said, Michael Geist, one of the gurus in Canada on the whole communications industry, did note that the big three telecoms were taken by surprise. They did not expect the government to come out with these kinds of decisions. They blocked a merger recently between Mobilicity and Telus, wanted to take over Mobilicity. Mobilicity is an upstart that has been struggling, and they wanted to take over the spectrum. They fully expected that they would be able to. The government said no. So they're reeling a little bit. Maybe the scenario that you laid out, Keith, by companies like Far East Tone to shake things up, to come in, provide serious competition, actually show some of these more entrenched, maybe stodgy companies, companies mm-hmm. becoming stodgy, on how to do business in UA. I mean, you know, things are changing. This is such a rapidly changing industry, and you cannot sit rest on your laurels. And yes, you've had an infrastructure. Yes, you had, you know, you were able to dominate this market. So now you can rest easy. There's no such thing. And that's what competition is all about. That's what big companies don't like. But that's what consumers do like. And this government has to, if they want to get reelected, they have to please the consumers. And that's what they're trying to do.
So let me ask you, I mean, if I headed to, say, Montreal, Toronto, or Vancouver, walked down the street and went up to somebody and said, look, what do you think of mobile phone service in Canada? What do you think about how much you're paying? What do you think about the services that are being offered? What do you think most people in Canada would say?
Well, those that know anything about the industry would say, we pay too much. Plain and simple, we pay too much. And we don't get as good service as we deserve. That's what I think. I could be wrong because I'm certainly not an expert on the industry, but just based from, you know, my own personal experience, it's ridiculous. For basic service, which is I have no roaming, I have a smartphone, but I don't have a plan that uses it. I'm paying $25 essentially to have a mobile phone for emergencies, and if I'm in a Wi-Fi area, like at home or in a hot Wi-Fi hotspot, I can't access the internet. But that's it. Roaming charges, forget it. I shut my cell phone off when I go south of the border. I pay $25 a month for that, plus tax, of course.
So, for example, if you were to use your phone across the border in the United States, which is not too far away, how much more would you be expected to pay if you wanted, say, data services or make phone calls?
I'd probably double it. I mean, and I have done. When I first got it, and I did make a few calls, to my husband across town or whatever, you know, and it doubled. And it was not. I did not like. I spent a lot of time on the phone either. Texting is free. Texting is okay, but so that's what I use the phone largely for: is texting, emergency local calls, and maybe accessing the internet if I'm in a Wi-Fi area. And that's it. But yeah, if I would try to use that and make really good use of it as a communications tool south of the border, I would at least double it. I'm quite sure.
Well, I'm sure, Paulette, this is a story that is going to continue for some time. Thank you very much for talking to us today.
You are very welcome.
Now, I suppose many of you outside the United States, or even inside the United States, probably have never heard of the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters. At their annual meeting recently, they made some major changes. To find out what they are, we're now joined by Jeff White, who tells us about that and also how the meeting went.
Brady Murray, the operations manager of WWCR in Nashville, Tennessee, was elected president of the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters at the NASB 2013 annual meeting in Birmingham, Alabama, May 15th to the 17th. He replaces former president Glenn Tapley of WEWN, whose term ended after 2 years as the association's president. Brady Murray had previously been vice president of the NASB, and Charles Caudill, president of World Christian Broadcasting, also based in the Nashville area, was elected the new NASB vice president. As full disclosure, yours truly and my wife Thais White of WRMI in Miami were re-elected secretary-treasurer and assistant secretary-treasurer of the NASB. Two NESB Board of Directors' terms ended this year, those of Glenn Tapley of WEWN and Dr. Adrian Peterson of AWR. Two new directors were elected, Terry Borders of WEWN and Dr. Dao Chow, president of Adventist World Radio. Terry Borders is the manager of the WEWN transmitter site in Van Diver, Alabama. Dr. Chow is based at AWR headquarters in Silver Spring, Maryland, but spends much of his time traveling around the world. The meeting was hosted by NASB member Eternal Word Television Network, EWTN, which operates shortwave station WEWN. A welcome reception took place on the evening of May 15th, followed by a dinner sponsored by EWTN at a renowned Birmingham barbecue restaurant. On May 16th, the meeting took place at EWTN headquarters in Irondale, which is a suburb of Birmingham. Glenn Tapley of WEWN, who was still the NESB president, opened the meeting.
Again, just want to invite you to come on our tour, which we're about to leave, and then we'll come back here and we'll begin the day. So get your walking shoes on and follow Terry Borders.
Glenn Tapley of EWTN opening the NASB 2013 annual meeting. The attendees toured the large state-of-the-art EWTN television studios, watching part of a live broadcast and observing how a Catholic Mass in Latin is translated and closed-captioned. They saw the television and radio control rooms and the studios where EWTN radio and WEWN shortwave programs are produced. After the tour, there were a series of talks and presentations about shortwave-related subjects for the rest of the day. Dr. Chow, Dao Chow of Adventist World Radio, gave an overview of AWR's worldwide operations. He said that AWR operates with only 30 employees, but with the help of many more people who work at AWR studios around the world, producing programs in over 80 languages. The NASB was pleased to welcome back a former member station, KVOH, in Simi Valley, California, which has been off the air for some time. The license is still held by La Voz de Restauración Broadcasting, but the Strategic Communications Group, headed by Reverend John Talo, is managing the station under the current owner's leadership. Talo's father-in-law was George Otis, who originally founded the station as part of the Voice of Hope network, which included stations in the Middle East. The new managers are refurbishing the station's shortwave transmitter, and they hope to have it back on the air within the next 90 days or so, with programs in English and Spanish. The antenna is beamed from Southern California toward Mexico and Cuba. NESB meeting delegates had a chance to meet the new vice president of Continental Electronics, who has recently taken over from Adil Mina, a regular fixture at NASB meetings for many years. Mina has recently semi-retired to spend more time with his family and more time at his home in Greece. His successor, Mike Rosso, gave a presentation in Birmingham about Continental Electronics and about Digital Radio Mondial, DRM, its status, and its plans for the near future. The date and place of the NASB 2014 annual meeting was announced. It will be held at the Voice of America, IBB, relay station in Greenville, North Carolina. Initial information is already on the NASB website, which is www.shortwave.org. Click on Annual Meeting. There's also an online registration form for the meeting. The shortwave.org website will also soon have PowerPoint presentations from the NASB 2013 meeting by Dr. Dao Chow about AWR, Mike Rosso with the DRM update, Mark Allen about broadcast tower maintenance, and Jerome Irigoyen about the TDF Isodon transmitter site, as well as a summary of Dr. Jerry Plummer's talk about the difficulty of finding in-band HF broadcast frequencies. Three albums of photos from the NESB 2013 meeting in Birmingham can be found on the NESB's Facebook page, which is www.facebook.com/NASB Shortwave.
All right, thanks, Jeff. We now turn our attention to propagation and what we can expect over the next 7 days. Here's Dan Hensley.
The 10.7 centimeter flux is 105 from June 15th to June 19th, June 20th up to 110, June 21st up 5 points to 115. The A index is stable at 5 all week long from June 15th to June 20th on June 21st, an A index spiking at 25. The KP index is 2 all week long from June 15th to June 20th, spiking at 5 on June 21st. We see the last remaining sunspot, 1765, moving out of view this week. No sunspots remaining, no new sunspots forming as of the time of this report. Although 1765 has a simple magnetic field, we don't expect any solar events as a result of this. Expect quiet band conditions this week and possibly some favorable propagation. Back to you, Keith.
All right, well, you know what? We're nearly at the end of this week's program. I just want to remind you again, if you want to catch PCJ Radio International in Southeast and East Asia, tune in Sundays between 13 and 14 hours UTC on 11835 kHz. That's 11835 kHz for Focus Asia Pacific with Andy Sennett and then The Happy Station Show. You can find all the details at our website, www.pcjmedia.com. Before we end off, if you wish to contact us to let us know what you think of the program or have any story ideas, our email address is very simple. It's mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. So on behalf of Pauline McQuarrie and Dan Hensley, this is Keith Powell wishing you well, hoping that you can join us again in 7 days' time for another program. 73 and 88 to the ladies.